Chapter 20. All Hands. The Vox had brought Sicarius to his feet. He strapped the scabbarded sword he had left by his side back onto his belt.
"Stay here,"
he warned Vedea, who nodded mutely, knowing better than to challenge the captain after what she had just heard. He was heading for the door to the reclusium and almost at the edge of the threshold when she said,
"Be careful, Cato. You are the heart of this ship and those aboard. All hands look to you."
Sicarius paused to absorb that statement, opened the door, and stepped out of the room. Gaius Prabian was waiting for him on the other side.
"I assume you have heard, Captain. Roan's men were vetted by Venatio. No sign of taint, no moral corruption of any sort. Darkness finds a way into men's hearts," was the only explanation the company champion could give.
They started walking swiftly, in the direction of Deck 13, Sicarius only hesitating a moment to ensure the door to the reclusium was sealed behind him.
"I want protection for Vedea,"
he said, cloak flapping behind him with the urgency of his steps.
"I have seen to it, my lord. A squad of armsmen are on the way."
Prabian paused, then added,
"There were no Astartes to spare." "We should have kept a closer eye on Roan. Isolated like that, you think we could have stopped it?"
They had passed through the first corridor. Sicarius acknowledged the few crewmen they met along the way. The mood was feverish, on edge, although only the Ultramarines knew the nature of the thing that had manifested in Deck 13. Its presence had been felt nonetheless, and spoke for the pervasive influence of the warp on ignorant and unready minds.
"I think the warp has depleted us, and I think we are currently ill-equipped for another crisis."
Crossing a junction, they headed left. The next section ended in a chevron-marked barrier. Prabian dismissed the engine seer standing sentry outside with a curt slash of his hand. He then proceeded to lift the gate, horning it up with the raw strength and revealing the maintenance shaft beyond.
"I know there is no point in telling you to armour yourself before we commit ourselves to this encounter," said Prabian.
Sicarius stepped onto the reinforced mesh platform and engaged the mechanism that set it churning down into the darkness below. Prabian jumped lightly aboard and pulled the security gate back down behind him. Flashing lumens lit the shadows in intermittent yellow light as they descended. They strafed Sicarius's face, picking out scars and old wounds. Another face watched him from beyond the gate. It kept pace with the lift, a constant presence as the decks went past in blurry, stenciled lettering. Its eyes glowed, burning dulcet and green, a malign intelligence contained in a mechanized body. Sicarius stared back. His hand, clenched around the haft of the Tempest blade, tightened its grip.
"I have all the armor I need," he replied, and averted his gaze.
Musty air and the reek of machine oil drifted up to them on the noisy breeze of coolant fans. Heat came with it, drawn from the ship's engines. The maintenance shaft ran down the entirety of the lower decks. It moved steadily, but not quickly. It was made with dependability in mind, not speed, but it was direct and the quickest way to their destination.
"Then I ask only this," said Prabian, drawing his sword.
The Gladius was forged of Talisarian steel. It had a blue tinge to the metal, a quirk of the folding process, and the words Animo and Honoris were etched in High Gothic on either side of the blade. The edge caught the light and flashed brilliantly, like captured fire before returning to its original state.
"If you are planning on doing anything reckless, then some warning would be appreciated. I would prefer you to at least afford me the opportunity to give my life for yours. Penitence for failure doesn't suit me, Cato."
Prabian gave a half smile. Sicarius laughed.
"I make no promises, Gaius. Stay on your toes."
Prabian gave a short bow.
"It is my perpetual state of being."
They faced forwards, the clunking refrain of the lifter the only sound between them, until Sicarius drew the Tempest blade. Lightning crackled down its perfect length, and it glowed with an inner fire that no darkness could quench. Its casting was perfect, a mirror sheen blade of storm-rack adamantium that appeared to churn the wildness of oceans. Intricate filigree bedecked the hilt, the nobility of Sicarius's familial line captured in metal. A metallic chime sounded as their two swords came together, both a signal to war and a mark of utmost respect between warriors. The weight of duty descended.
"We have to save them, Gaius." "On my honour, Captain," he replied. "We will, or I shall die trying."
Pilium fell to his knees for the third time. He had one hand pressed against the red wound to his chest, and his free arm draped around Shana's shoulders. She could not bear his weight. The fact she even tried was almost laughable. But he had neither the strength nor the will to argue. She cried out as his armoured body pressed upon her, a small noise suggested of stifled pain. It carried a note of desperation.
"Get up!"
she urged, and Pilium heard the guttural retching and swallowing of the beast as it devoured the last morsels of Tiberius.
"Please!"
More whimpering from the mortal. Her heart thundered, and Pilium could tell her sanity hung by a tenuous thread.
"Get her out!"
A cry from deeper into the hall. Had Deck 13 really been this long? It had not felt far on the way in, but then he hadn't had to crawl on his hands and knees. The words were Sepio's, one of Secutius's squad. Pilium turned, still down, and wanting to draw a weapon he no longer had in a hand that was unable to grasp it. The other Primaris Marine lived then. The darkness hid him from sight. The lamps had shorted, or the power drain had reached a critical mass. Either way, it was as black as the deep ocean and just as forbidding. Muzzle flare tore a hole in the dark, a savage rip doomed to reseal that revealed a head, arms and torso, but no legs. A beast had ripped them off. It had caught them, half charging, half flying onto its nascent wings, faster than they could outrun. Aegidus had been the rearguard. He had engaged, bolt rifle spitting out the last of its rounds. He had died quickly, bludgeoned and crushed by a gnarled fist. Cajus had been less fortunate. His death was piecemeal and slow. Only Sepio and Tiberius, dragging Pilium back from the torture, had prevented him from selling his own life as cheaply. It had brought them time, the beast's sudden fascination with Cajus's anatomy. It had obliterated Aegidus's skull, and smeared it across the deck, bone, blood and matter. Cajus's head, it flensed, whilst it was still attached to the body. His screams of agony rang for several haunting minutes. They had got close to the entrance, where Shana would roll back the gate and lock this thing in its prison until more warriors could be found to help kill it. Pilium could see the way out now, even as he remembered Secutius, caught up in the beast's claws and pulled apart like a piece of meat. And Tiberius, engulfed behind its wings as the beast pounced. Their ends were ignominious, inglorious. Pilium hauled himself up, Shana pushing ineffectually. In a part of his brain, the small part that was not otherwise occupied with thoughts of how he might survive to later kill this monstrosity, he supposed she needed to focus on something, some small act to keep the terror at bay just a little longer. Fear killed the mind, and the death of the mind led to the death of the body. And that is why fear had been bred out of his kind. It had no purchase, but something had slipped in, regardless of his conditioning. In the presence of the beast, Pilium felt a primordial unease, a deep and abiding sense of wrongness that he could not shake. Sepio's last act of defiance ended as his weapon fell silent. Pilium ran, Shana clinging on around his neck, though the agony was incandescent. His wounds knitted, the bones realigned. It hurt like a forged fire, and retreat was anathema to him. But to stand his ground now was to meet death and condemn Shana to the same fate. He would not have that on his conscience, even in death, especially in death, where there was no hope of redemption.
"Hold on to me, quartermaster," he said, and heard the roaring of the beast behind him. "Death!"
It raged, in a voice dredged from some dark abyssal place. They barreled through the opening, pounding hoofbeats like a cavalry charge, hounding their steps. Pilliam let Shana down and turned to face the beast. It had slowed, perhaps to savour the kill. It was huge, a hulking shadow of red meat skin and overtaught and bulked muscle. Hot, coal-black eyes regarded him with bestial malice. Wings at full stretch cast a bat-like shadow. Smoke, spilling from its hide, obscured the rest.
"Seal it!"
said Pilliam, and unsheathed his gladius, determined to at least die with a weapon in his hands. The emergency lumens at the edge of the entranceway flickered. Shana failed her first attempt at the lock code, her shaking fingers making a mess of it.
"Do it now, quartermaster!"
Pilliam urged, getting into stance and readying himself for a fight he could not contest, let alone win. Shana tried again, and this time the lock code was accepted. Gears grinding, the door began to move. It had reached halfway when the lumens winked out and all power failed. The door stopped moving. Shana's anguish was a barely heard whisper.
"Oh, Thron!"